Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Rewind. I'm your host Travis, and with me again is Xavier. How you doing?
Hello.
You've been waiting a long time to do this.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a nice little show, I think, planned for this week's episode.
I hope so.
Yeah, we're going to do comic book movies.
Like Avengers? Spider-Man?
No. No, this episode...
Batman.
No,
you know, Superman.
No, no, we're not going to... No, shut up. We're not going to be doing... We're not going to be doing any Batmans.
Garfield.
Maybe. No Batmans, no Supermans. You're not going to hear about Avengers here. No Captain America, Iron Man, nothing. We're not going to do any of that.
But surely those are all the comic book movies there are.
Oh, pray tell, my friend. No, those are all movies based on comics from Marvel and DC.
I thought you were going to say Don't Call Me Shirley.
Damn,
a softball that underhanded that one to you. Swing and a miss.
I failed miserably.
Okay.
Damn. All right, well, maybe I'll redeem myself at some point in this episode. No promises, though. All right. No, we're going to talk about comic book movies that are based on non-Marvel DC comics.
Yeah.
Because there's been a slew, yes, I said slew, of comic movies that you may not even know knew were based on comic books.
Even some of these I didn't even know were comic books.
Yeah. Some of them were going to be kind of obvious.
And with no false modesty, that's kind of saying, you know.
I've known you for a long time, so yes, that is
saying
so.
I was surprised, like, what? That was a comic?
Yeah. But I think for the most part, these might be... obvious, or people might already know about them.
Yeah,
but if not, well, hopefully we'll teach you something.
We'll enlighten some souls.
Yeah, we'll learn you.
We'll learn you something. We'll learn you something.
So what we're gonna do is we're gonna mention a title of a movie, and then I'm gonna mention the comic that it's based off of, and then we'll talk about the movie itself.
Okay. Yeah. Now, okay. Well, a lot of these I'm not that familiar with the comics. Most of these, as a movie, I know.
And some of these I'm familiar with the comic and not the movie, so that could...
Oh, really? Okay.
That could work out.
Yeah, because very few
Or it could be a total disaster.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got to listen to find out for sure.
Nicely done. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so let's get this party started here, okay? I think when I think of comic book movies that are not your mainstream Marvel DC, one of the main ones that I would like to say is Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
Spawn was...
Tom McFarlane, right?
Created by Tom McFarlane back when a lot of writers and artists left Marvel back in 92, and they created their own comic company called Image Comics. And Tom McFarlane,
he was on the ground floor of that?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
He previously worked on Spider-Man. He did a few things for Hulk.
Yeah, I remember him. I was a big Spider-Man kid. Yeah. I remember his particular artwork.
Oh, it was beautiful.
He was a great artist.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And he took that, and he created Spawn. And if you see that, you can see kind of the comparisons to the faces, like the face structure and everything. It's some of the designs and the way...
That kind of elongated mouth, I guess, is the best way I can describe it.
But anyway, I think if you don't know who Spawn is, I think if you see a picture of him, you're going to know who Spawn is.
He almost looks like a reverse... It's like they took the way his eyes are drawn.
Mm-hmm.
He almost looks like Spider-Man, just colors are inverted in a way.
A little bit. Like, it's easy to say where he got his inspiration from.
Yeah,
for his first creation.
Yeah.
That was created in 92. And I think as far as Image goes on those original creations, I kind of want to say that Spawn was like the forebearer of that. I mean, he was maybe the most popular one out of that. His had the longest running series of comics.
Oh, the early Dark Horse, you mean?
Image.
Or Image, whatever.
And, but anyway, that, I mean, that spawned off.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. I'm sorry, folks. Yeah. But like, he had like action figures, and there was some other stuff.
Oh, God, yeah. I remember.
I still have some action figures.
Yeah, I've seen those. Yeah. And they're cool.
Yeah, right.
Like I said, visually, they're a striking character.
They're like, just besides Spawn, but the other characters that he created, they're striking. Like, they're very visual.
Yeah.
And the action figures, they're like small statues, pretty much.
Yeah, I just, like a little while ago, I was like, ooh, you got a little Violator toy here on your show. Yeah.
But because of the success of that, it wasn't until, 97? I think it was 97. Yeah, 97, I think the movie came out.
I think it was 95, but give me a second for my brain to catch up, because I'm not Googling this at all. But the Spawn film came in 97, like I said.
Oh, like you said, yes.
Like I said.
Yeah, so 97 by...
Shit.
By New Line, right? I believe that was...
Yeah, like, yeah, that was New Line. I do remember that, actually.
I remember it was 97 because I was working at the box office at the Cinemark Theater.
Oh, well, you cheated then.
Yeah. Well,
I remember being excited for this movie. Because this is before... Like, I knew he was a comic book hero, and this is before a new comic book movie was coming out every other month. And, you know... It was a heavily... Visual effects were still also becoming a thing in the mid-90s, you know?
It was the special effect movie of the year.
It was... So says the cover of the VHS. Yeah. And do you remember... Okay, at the time... Do you remember liking the effects of this movie at the time? Be honest.
I thought it was different, for sure. For good? I really... Honestly, I can't say if I remember at the time.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at them now, and the effects do not hold up.
They're dated.
They were part of that. In the mid-90s... You know, the effects, none of the mid-90s effects hold up per se. Like, you look at Reptile in the Mortal Kombat movie, and I remember everybody was saying, like, it's a fully CGI character, this is groundbreaking, and at the time I remember thinking, like, that looks cool. And you look at it now, it looks like something a kid can make on his laptop.
A kid probably can't make that on his laptop.
Yeah, and Spawn is similar, that cape of his...
I know what they're going for.
Yeah.
Because in the comics, his cape is like long and flowing and it kind of...
It's almost like alive.
Yeah, and it kind of wraps around him and everything. It does all kind of crazy things. So in the movie, I think at the time that what they had to work with, I think they did a good job.
Yeah. I thought his costume looked really good.
Yeah, they captured what the essence of the costume was supposed to be.
Yeah, and the fact that his eyes were glowing beneath the mask. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even know how that actor could breathe, let alone see, but it looked great on film. A young Black Dynamite, Michael Jai White.
That's what I was saying. That was my introduction to Michael Jai White, yeah.
Michael Jai White played Spawn. And
he'll always be Spawn to me.
Really? Oh, until he made Black Dynamite.
Yeah.
And now he's Black Dynamite. That's why I said a young Black Dynamite, because that's who he is in my head. And for like half a second there, I was like, shit, what is the actor's name? I blanked, because he's Black Dynamite to me. He wasn't great, but...
There is one standout performance in Spawn.
Johnny Legs. Our boy. John Leguizamo is as clown / Violet. Well, just clown.
God, so many good lines he had.
So many great... Yeah, he's like the only thing that holds up as far, in that movie.
Yeah.
Were some of his lines and his performance. And he plays like a midget clown. So he had to be uncomfortable in that gigantic fat clown suit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was great.
The only other thing I remember is being a big Transformers geek. Now, Bulja, the big character, the devil creature. He was voiced by Frank Welker. Soundwave, Dr. Claw, all those kind of characters. You know,
Malbolgia. Mm-hmm. Which is, he's essentially like the devil. Yeah. But they didn't want to say the devil. Because I guess they didn't want to angry.
That's the only time I've heard Malbolgia used in like character reference.
Yeah, the movie. I watched it again a couple years ago. The plot is kind of silly, and it's not a great film.
Yeah. Well.
They did an HBO animated series, I guess, after the movie came out.
Yeah.
It
was after the movie.
Yeah. That was really good. Mm-hmm. That was, I don't know what the Spawn movie was rated, if it was rated R or not, but the cartoon was definitely R. HBO cartoon. And,
Well, it was HBO, so there you go.
Yeah, there was cussing and everything. That was really well done.
Keith David.
Keith David was Spawn. Oh my god, Goliath is Spawn.
Right?
Yeah, that was a really good cartoon. I'd love to go back and revisit that.
Yeah, I still actually own them on DVD still.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah, Spawn. That's probably arguably one of the first things I think of too. I think of Do you have an order you want to do this in? You said you wanted to lump some guys together.
I tell you what, go ahead and tell me the next one. What you got?
Well, another one that I think of when I think of non-comic book movies is The Crow.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah. When did that one come out? I want to say early 90s.
Well, the comic, The Crow, was created by James LeBar. Swell guy, by the way. He was created in 1989.
Sensing a little sarcasm there.
I met the guy once. He's not one of the pleasantest guy. It was published by Caliber Press, Caliber Comics. But the movie came out in, what did you say, 91?
I'm just off memory. I want to say early 90s. I think I remember seeing that in the theater as kind of a kid.
We got a fact checker on that?
Yeah. But yeah, Brandon Lee was the titular character. In fact, most people know this as the movie that he died on.
It's infamous. It's infamous.
Yeah, he died making... No, 94 is when he made this movie.
Okay, 94. Okay.
Yeah, and from what I've understood, apparently, like, a prop gun.
It was supposed to be a blank.
It was supposed to be a blank or something, and he got shot for real.
Yeah.
And he died. And through a little bit of CGI trickery, they pieced together his last few scenes of the film. I think we're going to see a little bit of that with Paul Walker's latest.
And didn't we see that with Heath Ledger in Dark Knight?
Was it Dark Knight? No, he was alive with Dark Knight. He was filming the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Oh, okay, so he
and
finished.
Then they cast like Colin Farrell and Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
To sort of do that. But yeah. I heard that they're going to use a little CGI trickery to make Paul Walker's last scenes.
Yeah.
And that's
I've heard some weird things they're going to do on that.
Yeah, and they did the same thing with him because Brandon Lee died. And this was the movie that was going to catapult him mm-hmm. into like the A-list of action heroes and of action actors and all that, and it was an awesome.
He's
movie.
Definitely captivating on the screen. Like
yeah.
anytime that he's in the scene, you can't really say it's the makeup or whatever. Like his presence, like his just overall, like his tone of voice, everything, his mannerisms, everything is just you're drawn to it.
Yeah. And what's cool about this one is up till this point, and again, he's Bruce Lee's son. He was known for doing his kung fu stuff mm-hmm. or karate, whatever. He didn't do any of that in this movie. Mm-hmm. He didn't rely on his kung fu or anything.
Purely
like that.
Acting.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty acting, and yeah. So and he was good. So yeah, he could have. Who knows? He might still be making movies today if it wasn't for that. Did you see the second Crow?
I was about to say yeah. Well, that wasn't the end of the Crow. Just
no.
in that first movie. No, that was
no. Well, no, that wasn't not by a long shot. Was at the end. Did you see the second Crow?
Yes, City of Angels.
Yeah,
yeah.
I have a soft spot for this movie. Because it was in the theaters when I was working
right,
there.
Right, right.
So for that reason. But, you know, visually, that's a visually striking film.
It is.
Visually, yeah. it's almost the antithesis of the first one. Whereas the first one was filmed very much in shadow, and it's like it's constantly raining, and Brandon Lee's hair is always like half damp. The other one, it's very brightly lit, even though it's nighttime, and the crow looks dusty. Mm-hmm. Like, it looked like if you hit him, he would shake all this dust out of his hair. Like, he's...
like a little gold dust person,
like a little,
yeah,
gold,
yeah.
little gold, like a gold dust woman.
Yeah,
yeah, and Mia Kirshner's in it. Mia Kirshner. Anyways, there's a lot of. I just watched the second Crow not too long ago, and there's a lot that doesn't work about that movie.
I can't remember much on the villain. I'll tell you one thing that stands out in my mind for the first two movies: the soundtrack, dude.
The first one's awesome. It's got yeah. Pantera and it's got Stone Temple. The second one, I think, is an even better soundtrack.
I know we were both hooked on that soundtrack
yeah,
for a while.
I love that soundtrack. I used to love to clean up the popcorn to The Crow 2 because they would play Hole. I can't believe I'm saying Hole is an awesome band. But and then Filter had a good song too. So I used to.
Well, there's a little asterisk next to that Hole song.
It's a cover.
There you go.
So, yeah. So Courtney Love did not write a good song. She covered a good song. So fuck her. She murdered Kurt Cobain. No, she didn't. But yeah, fuck her anyway. And then they made two more Crows.
Yeah. Was it just two more? Or
well, I know of at least Crow Salvation. I think is the third one
mm-hmm.
with Kristen Dunst and Eric Mabius is the Crow.
Mm, yes.
I never saw that. And then they made a fourth one, and with Eddie Furlong as the Crow,
Mr. Personality, Mr.
and David Boreanaz is the bad guy. I've never seen this movie. I kind of want to. It just
looks bad. Like if you see the cover art for this movie, like. David Boreanaz just looks like he's like telling people to help. Like, help me. Help
he
me.
Looks sad.
Yeah.
He looks sad that he's in this movie. And Tara Reid's in it, so you know it's going to be good. I mean.
Of course, yeah.
Of course, yeah. The star of Sharknado is in this movie, so you know it's going to be good. And they did a TV show, too. I almost forgot about that. I think it's called Crow Stairway to Heaven, I think, is the name of the TV show.
Yeah, I believe it is. Yeah.
And Mark Damascus is the Crow. And I never really saw that. I caught like 10 minutes of this show once, so don't quote me like as an expert. But the only thing I remember is that he would Hulk out, so to speak.
Yes, like the makeup would like, it would appear on
yeah.
his face.
Like,
yeah,
I remember this one scene.
It transformed,
sort of. He was in like a carnival or something. Yeah, that's Crow. In the daytime, in his coat and everything. And like this dude comes up and starts fighting him. And then the crow, like, falls down on all fours, and you hear, like a morphine sound effect. Uh-huh. And when he stands up, he's
yes.
got the makeup on.
I forgot about that. Yes, the sound, the fountain, the sound effect.
I was like, what is this? And I changed it. I never looked back. Never gave it a second look. Even though Mark Damascus is a good fighter and all that.
Well,
and good on film. But, yeah.
Well, that's the thing about that show. It brought back Eric Draven. The character.
Oh, he was the Brandon Lee character?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't. I mean, like I said, I gave it about 10 minutes of my time, and that's 10 minutes I'm never going to get back. So yeah, that, you know, I could totally see that movie getting rebooted. It's, you know, the idea of a guy coming back to avenge his death. That's timeless. I could totally see people, you know, buying that right now. Anyways.
Yeah, if of all the franchises and things like that to be rebooted, remade, whatever, why not? There's already been several sequels to it, so.
Yeah.
So why not kind of start from scratch?
You know? Yeah, I could see that. But I wouldn't even mind seeing that.
But then again, the first Crow with Brandon Lee as Eric Draven, the character, I don't want to see that remade. I think that was just, I don't know, I don't want to see that tarnished.
Well, I mean, you don't have to make it Eric Draven. You know what? I don't hold the Crow precious, mm-hmm. because the Crow 2 was essentially the same plot. Oh, a guy comes back from the dead, right. Event. Even the villain, like, gets a hold of the Crow and kills it and steals his immortality. That's a lot of the same aspects of the first one, and I enjoyed it just as much, even though it was just doing the same things. Anyway, whatever. What's another one? We got a lot to get through.
Yeah. All right. Here's a fun one here. Judge Dredd.
Mm.
Judge Dredd was...
When you say fun.
Of course you think of Judge Dredd. But that was created back in 1977 over in...
I don't know, is that old? It's a British one.
Yeah, it's from British comics. It was published by IPC. He was actually a character in a series called 2000 AD. Shows you how dated it is. But the movie came out...
I want to say 95, but the Sylvester Stallone movie.
Yeah, this is Sylvester Stallone. Yeah, it came out in 1995. Of course, infamously portrayed by Sylvester Stallone. The biggest... There's two things I always think about this movie that, like, people talked about. Was the fact that it was rated R.
It was?
Yeah, it was a rated R movie.
Oh, that's lame, because it didn't earn that R rating.
No. And it didn't make any sense either, because you're alienating a lot of your audience that you're trying to get into.
Yeah.
Legally, I mean, people sneak anyways, yeah. But I mean,
I saw it when I was a kid.
Yeah, exactly, you know. But that and the fact that Sylvester Stallone took off the helmet.
Yeah, well, at the time, I don't think I even knew it was a comic. So
I didn't know the history of Judge Dredd when that movie came out, so I didn't know what the big deal was about him taking the helmet off. But apparently, you don't do that.
He does not do that. Have you ever read the books?
I've tried to pick
them up. They're black and white.
Yeah.
And yeah, and so not to sound like, you know, I don't have patience for black and white. But I picked them up and I've leafed through.
I don't got patience for black and white comics.
Yeah. Well, okay, yeah. Well, every one I get a hold of is like an anthology. So it's like a phone book size book, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I don't have the energy to take on this gigantic tome of a book. So I've never really given the books a proper chance. But I probably like to, because I like the idea of Judge Dredd.
Yeah, just this the overall style and
now,
everything.
I heard, don't quote me, but I heard way back in the day, like in the 80s, they wanted to make this into a movie, and something about the rights or whatever, the idea fell through and they couldn't get it made, but they had this script, so they tweaked it a little bit, and that script became RoboCop.
Really?
And there's some similar, you know, when you think about it, you know, these, because Judge Dredd is almost robotic in his dedication to law enforcement and all that kind of stuff. And they just said, let's make him an actual fucking robot and make him a RoboCop. The Judge Dredd movie, yeah, he took his mask off. Like I said at the time, that didn't offend me. Everything else in the movie offended me because it was a pretty terrible movie. Rob Schneider. Just shoehorned in because we need some laughs. We need some levity in this movie, so let's just shove it in. Armando Santi was the bad guy, and I liked him. He was overacting to just the right amount.
Yeah.
To make him fun.
And a villain.
But that movie, forget Judge Dredd, Sylvester Stallone's Judge. Now that property, the comic was not remade, rebooted, I guess, not too long ago, a couple years ago.
I wouldn't say reboot, it's just a different take.
Yeah.
Because you can't really, reboot it. It was just because the movies already take place, he's already a thing, so.
Yeah, another movie from the books came out.
The more recent one, yeah.
Not too long ago, in 2012, called just Dredd.
Yeah.
With Carl Urban as Dredd.
I was kind of excited when this one came out. Like, I was looking forward to it. I wanted it to be a good...
That movie was awesome, dude. Yeah. It was proper rated R. It felt like a throwback to 90s action movies.
Violent.
Blood. Yeah, blood and violence and cursing and all that. Oh, and he keeps his mask on. And kudos to Carl Urban for agreeing to star in a movie where you don't even show your face the whole time.
Right.
Yeah. He's just a mouth in this movie, just his grimacing mouth this whole time. And he was awesome in it. Lena Headey from Game of Thrones is in it as a bad guy. She's pretty good too. Everybody's good in this movie.
Looking as hideous as fuck.
Yeah, she's all scarred up.
Yeah.
I got like nothing bad to say about that movie. I enjoyed it. Yeah. It's probably on Netflix. I think when it was on Netflix, I watched it like 3 times on there.
And there was rumors that it was going to go around for another movie, but I think recently it was just confirmed that there's not going to be a sequel to it, which is kind of a bummer.
But. That is lame. And I hate to say it, but make another movie and just cast a new guy.
Something.
Most people aren't going to notice it's a new guy, because like I said, he's just a mouthpiece.
Yeah, literally.
Quite literally, yeah. So make it, come on, we want some more Dread. You know, I don't even care if Dread, I just want some good R-rated action movies to come out, you know?
Absolutely.
I hate this PG-13 watered down action that Hollywood keeps doing because they want to get teenagers to buy tickets.
Which they sneak into anyway, so.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Or just download it, whatever.
I was going to say, like, who cares? Because most teenagers don't go to the movies anymore. They just download stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Judge Dredd.
What you got? You got another one?
Let me see. When I think of comic book movies, you know what I think of also came to my head was, you ever see Tank Girl?
Oh, yes, I did.
You did? Okay.
Yes.
Did you see it recently?
Yes, actually. I saw it because it's on Netflix.
Oh, okay. I saw it a year ago. I've always defended this movie, and I've always had some love for it.
I don't think you had a love for the movie. I think you had a love for Lori Petty as Tank Girl.
No, I had love for Naomi Watts as Jet Girl.
Oh, you're a Jet Girl.
Yeah, I'm a Naomi Watts guy. She was hot in that movie.
Gotcha.
No, I do love Lori Petty in this. I think she was a great Tank Girl, though.
Yeah.
I think she was great.
She owned that role.
Yeah, totally. She got it. She got the silliness of it. I think she was great in it. I love Malcolm McDowell in it as the bad guy.
Let's be honest. Did we ever mistake her for Gwen Stefani?
No, well, I could see how, Well, I wonder if Gwen Stefani tailored her look back in the day.
Yeah, because I think because Tank Girl came out first before Garbage. So. I mean, Garbage. No doubt. Yeah.
No doubt.
It's the Garbage before him. But anyway, Tank Girl, it actually started out back in 88 over, it was a British comic.
That's not a British one, right?
Yeah. But that actually debuted in a magazine to spotlight comic creators and things like that. But then eventually got bought out and sold, whatever, to Dark Horse Comics back in 91. And then the movie came out in 95 by United Artists.
From what I understand, the comic was kind of, Dark Horse, it was kind of dark.
Mm-hmm.
Like her boyfriend was a kangaroo. And in the movie, they kind of tried to avoid mentioning that she was actually banging a kangaroo, because that would be gross.
Apparently that was in like the theatrical release.
I think there's like a post-coital scene where there's no sex scene, but there's a scene where it's clearly stated that she was sleeping with one of those mutated kangaroos.
Yeah.
But I think in the theatrical release they tried to tone it down or try to make it vague.
No, I think it's the opposite. I think it was a little bit more explicit in the actual theatrical release, but in all the subsequent releases, like on Netflix and video releases, it was more toned down.
Okay, well,
but there's something to that extent.
Yeah, even in theatrical release, where I think there is a post-coital scene where they're, but even then, it doesn't say they just had sex.
Right. Yeah.
But whatever.
More importantly, Ice-T's in the movie.
Okay, that's fair. How can we not mention that Ice-T plays a mutant kangaroo in a movie?
he was on a talk show. And they're trying to give him a hard time about being in the movie. And he says, "You know what, man? I got paid $800,000 for that role, so I don't really care."
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah.
I just think of 800. Well, shit. Malcolm McDowell's in that.
Yeah,
he's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I don't get though is his character in the movie. Like, he gets his face scarred up or whatever.
Right.
So they cut his head off.
Right.
And they give him like a holographic head.
Right. Yeah.
How the fuck does that work? Where is his brain? Where is his mouth? How does he breathe? You can't just, like, it's not like it's a hand and you can just get a fake hand. It's your fucking head.
Yeah, you can.
It's your fucking head. And he's got a holographic head. Where does everything else?
I think that's an issue with the movie that you're trying to defend and you can't do it.
That's what I'm talking about. Maybe that's because I'm saying I used to hold that movie more dear than I do now that when I go back and watch it.
It is a fun movie. Like, don't take, like...
No, yeah, it is a fun movie.
Especially with all the music. The first, like, maybe 15, 20 minutes of them, like, setting up everything is very fun. You know, when they got the different... The music going on, the animation.
They intercut, like, animation
throughout
the movie. That's just something cool.
Interesting fact about that. The creators of Tank Girl went on record and said that working on this movie was the worst experience they've ever had. And the movie itself, like the directors and everything, they actually forgot to film certain scenes, and that's when they had to go back and do the animated scenes.
I just thought it was a cool like, transitional.
Yeah, me too. I just thought that was just them. But if you go back and look at it, it is kind of weird that they just cut to those.
You know, I always sense that, and maybe that's why I can. Mm. I haven't warmed up to it in years. Anyways,
would you like to see a Tank Girl reboot? And if so, who to play Tank Girl?
No, I don't think I would. I don't know. It was that movie is like very 90s.
It is very 90s.
You know that spirit of the 90s too. And I don't think that I don't
very
know.
Punk rocky.
Yeah. Tank Girl's like she's like punk rock. Yeah, I don't know if that would translate well in today's market. So I don't even think I would want to see a reboot of it, a remake or whatever you want to call it. Anyway, Tank. What's another good one?
I got a really good one for you. Very mainstream. Spawned a sequel. Nope, no pun intended. Hellboy.
Oh, Hellboy. Yeah, that's probably the one everybody knows and loves, hopefully. Well, yeah. Not enough love to make a part three that I'm still waiting on.
Hellboy was created by Dark Horse Comics in 93. It wasn't until 2004 that it was released by Columbia. But that movie, as good as the first one was, The Golden Army.
I love that second one, dude. Man. Yeah. Now Guillermo del Toro, the guy who wrote and directed, he loves Hellboy.
You can see it.
And that's what I'm saying. And it comes through. You can tell he loves this property. And he lobbied really, really hard to get Ron Perlman. Because Ron Perlman, he wasn't a big name. He's still not that big of a name.
He's a niche character. He's a niche name like, for genre.
And the studio kept like, no, we'll make this movie, but we want someone else. And Guillermo was like, no, I'm not. For years, he kept holding it. And he was like, I want Ron Perlman or I'm not making it. And then finally they gave in. And Ron Perlman, I don't want to see anybody but Ron Perlman.
Right, yeah. He is
Hellboy. Yeah. I don't want to see anybody else besides Guillermo del Toro make this movie. And it doesn't look like it's going to happen, at least not with these two people. So I'm stuck between getting a new Hellboy movie or getting the one I really, really want. Unfortunately, I'm not going to get the one I really want.
If you can only get one, would you rather have Hellboy 3 or Pacific Rim 2?
Hellboy 3.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hellboy 3, I think so.
There's more story to be told on that one, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
You can have more fun with that one.
Yeah, Hellboy 3. I'm still like debating it. Because I do want a Pacific... Well, I keep hearing the Pacific Rim 2 is in the works.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Hellboy...
Which I think that's taken all of his time and energy.
Yeah. Hellboy 2 especially, there's just so much in the design of these characters. And there's so much imagination, so much creativity. It's not like anything we've ever seen. Right. You can't say Hellboy is reminiscent of this or that. Or no, it kind of stands alone as a unique entity.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant and beautiful.
Did you ever watch the animated Hellboy movies?
Oh yeah, they did a couple.
There's two of them, wasn't there?
Yes, Sword of Storms and Blood and Fury, something like that. I don't know. Don't quote me. These animated those are cool because they have all the original cast,
right?
The voices, Ron Perlman and John Hurt and all those guys. They're okay. I don't love them. I love them because they're Hellboy.
It's good because if you really love the characters, they're awesome. You know, but if you're just kind of a casual fan of the title, then you may not enjoy it too much. I don't know, but I mean, they're good. You know, animated takes because you can do certain things that you can't do in live action. So,
but yeah, talk about like the design of Hellboy's makeup.
Yeah,
it looks
fantastic job.
It looks it's crazy awesome how they transferred it from the page to the live action film. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, another comic book movie. We talked about it a little bit. I talked about one of them last time I was here. It's Sin City.
Okay, all right.
Okay, yeah, Frank Miller.
Beautifully executed.
Yeah, it's like literally taken from page to the screen. Like shot for shot, line for line. So much, like, okay, Frank Miller, the guy who wrote the comic book,
back in 91 from Dark Horse Comics. Frank Miller. I'm sure you've heard the name. I mean,
he's done a lot of, from Batman to Daredevil, he's done a lot of great work with a lot of great characters. Now, Robert Rodriguez, who made the film, wanted to give Frank Miller this is what I've read too, and it's been years since I first read this bit of trivia. But he, because he did like a frame for frame, shot for shot he almost used the book like storyboards for the film. He wanted to give Frank Miller co-director credit on the film, even though, you know, Frank Miller didn't really direct it. And the Directors Guild, the DGA, said that's not going to work. So Robert quit the DGA because he really wanted to give credit to Frank Miller because he really loved what he'd done with these books, and he wanted to give proper respect to them. In fact, the opening to Sin City, the one with Josh Hartnett and Mary Shelton, where he shoots on the roof, he filmed that before he ever got the go-ahead to make this movie. He just called a couple actors, say, hey, let's film this little seven-minute short. He took that footage, showed it to Frank Miller, and says, this is my vision. This is how I want it to look. Visually, this is what I'm going to do. And Frank Miller's like, whoa, that looks really good. Okay, you have my blessing to go make this movie, Sin City. Yeah. And there's another one where you can tell the filmmaker has a lot of love for the source material. It's not just somebody they hired because a studio got the rights to this, got this guy to make this. No, this is where the filmmaker loved the book to begin with and wanted to bring the vision to the screen. You know, like kind of like Hellboy, an act of love. And the first one, well, they're both great. Like I said, the only thing I got against the second one is it came too late. It was too little, too late.
Yeah, what was the? There was quite a few years.
It was like a decade, almost.
Yeah, because Sin City, the movie, came out in 2005.
Yeah, I remember I saw it like three times in the theater.
Yeah,
I kept going again and again. I thought it was awesome.
And I just recently rewatched it again as the recut, re-edited version of the first Sin City, where they basically took all the stories and they separated them out, and they have like title cuts from
like a Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, they had Big Fat Kill, Yellow Bastard, and they put them in a different order. Like in the recut, it starts off with Yellow Bastard. So, but anyway, the second movie, yeah, like you said, it's just
I got nothing bad to say about it. It's just once it came out, it's like I waited 10 years to see the exact same thing, just taken from other books that I already had happened to have read.
But with the same vein as Sin City. There was another Frank Miller story, not really story, but his name was attached to it, but The Spirit.
I heard of that.
I think they were trying to take the
idea. Totally.
Yeah, the tone and the look and visuals of Sin City and kind of recapture that bottle, you know.
I never saw it. I don't know what it was. Right from the get-go, I was like, it's a wannabe Sin City.
Yeah, I think that was the big thing that everybody had with it. Like, when they saw it, they're like, what, this is just Sin City. Didn't you see this?
Yeah, it was too derivative. And I don't know if Frank had anything. Was it based on something he had written?
Well, it was based off a comic strip.
A comic strip?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that kind of falls in the same line as...
Yeah.
But,
I don't know. I did catch like 15 minutes on TNT one time.
Is that the one with Samuel Jackson? Is he in there? And he's like some...
He's got like something's up with his eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cast also was kind of... Like, Sin City has an awesome cast. Mm-hmm. A great cast. Clive Owen and Bruce Willis and just tons of cool people in it. Mickey Rourke and Benicio and all sorts of cool people. This cast wasn't as cool. And off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody other than Sam Jackson and Gabriel Mock, who plays the titular Spirit. But I don't know. I don't remember. Now, you know, you were saying a movie that sort of followed Sin City as far as the effects go. There's another that also kind of followed 300.
Okay.
As far as just having an actor work in a complete green screen, where everything other than the props that they're holding is CG. That's kind of what Sin City did, and that's kind of what 300 did, only they went in an opposite way. Rather than making it black and white, they made everything vibrant and colorful.
As much as 300 appears to be a comic book, I wonder how many people actually knew that was a comic book.
I don't think I did at the time.
Yeah, because it's not a well-known comic. It was again, released by Dark Horse Comics back in 98, and it wasn't until 2007 that it was released, so almost 10 years that it took for them to actually make it as a movie.
I don't think I knew Sin City was a comic when the movie came out.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you go out and get the comics after
the movie? Yeah, after that I went and I bought like all of them, and I read them all, and that's why when the new movie came out, I was really familiar with the source material, so to see the story, which follows it again so closely, it wasn't a big deal, because I was like, I know this story so well, and I've been reading the book for 10 years. But did you like 300?
I did. I liked the visual style of it.
That movie just made me want to go to the gym.
Right. And work out. No, it did make me feel inadequate, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. But that's an awesome movie.
Yeah, there's a couple things about that. Not that particular movie, but what it... I guess created. I don't know. There was a sequel to 300.
not too long ago, like a year or two ago.
But that was interesting for me personally. Like, I find it interesting the fact that the sequel of 300...
Is it a sequel?
Exactly, that's my point. It's a prequel. It takes place lateral at the same time as 300, and then it's a sequel.
So it's like a prequel, a sequel, and a same time cool.
Yes. Yes.
Patent pending. I'm coining that right.
But that was I think that was the first time I've ever seen that done in a movie.
Yeah. Where it's like the events that we know are kind of happening off screen, backstage.
This is taking place the same time as the first movie, just down the road, pretty much, you know.
And again, other than Lena Headey and the bad guy, Xerxes, Rodrigo Santoro.
Eva Green.
As far as characters from both films.
I'll jump the gun on that one a little bit.
No. I was saying, but I mean, there's a whole new crop of characters. Yeah, right, there's one or two people that they bring over at Faramir.
It's kind of the bridge to gap.
David Wenham, is the guy who loses his eye. I think he has a little bit in it. Doesn't mm-hmm. he? Yeah, okay. I only saw that one once. Did you like the second one?
Aside from the aspect of what I just mentioned, mm-hmm. I think, it was
just more of the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, kind of like, yeah. So it was like, okay, I just saw this in 300.
Yeah.
Only it was like done slightly better in 300.
A little off topic here, but I think the style of 300, it inspired the show Spartacus. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, I've never seen it. A buddy of mine has been trying to get me to watch that, yeah.
It's pretty good. I don't know. The first few episodes are really like 300-esque style, like with the...
Is there like abs, six packs all over the place?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
But just the, again, the stylized violence.
Okay. Yeah. Does a dude like, where the camera speeds up and then slows down to show action, then speeds up and then slows?
Yeah. We mentioned this a little while ago about the spirit. You know, that was a comic strip turned into a movie, pretty much. That's not the only case that's happened. There's a couple other instances. I just want to kind of touch on these just for...
Garfield the movie? Is that where we're going with this?
Sure, why not?
That sucked. Anyways, what else you got?
There was, from 1990, a Warren Beatty movie, Dick Tracy.
Oh, Dick Tracy. Tracy. Everything that he owns. I'm sorry.
Dude, just the cast in that movie, man.
How did they get all these actors to agree to be in this movie? How did they get... I assume Warren Beatty must have wanted it. Or maybe he
did. He did. Yeah, like he funded and everything.
Yeah,
like,
I remember thinking, because he directed it.
This is a passion project, I think.
Yeah, Warren Beatty directed this.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Al Pacino, Dustin Hoffman, Paul Sorvino, just a crazy amount of good actors. And there's one early Madonna.
I was about to say her, like a leading movies. Lady role for her.
Yeah, and Manny Patinkin is in this. And just a whole crop of crazy actors are in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I remember liking it as a kid. It was very colorful.
Mm-hmm.
It like the backgrounds were all like paintings.
The characters themselves, like all the villains.
Yeah, like Flat Top. He's got a flat head.
They took
and Little Face. He's got a tiny face.
They took the characters from the comic strip and he made them a real thing.
Now, I remember. I never read the comic strip, but I remember the cartoon. There was a cartoon as I used to watch as a kid, and Dick Tracy like never did anything. It was always like. He had, like, deputies or something who would solve the crimes. At the end of the episode, Dick Tracy shows up. He's like, good job, or something. Like, Dick Tracy never did shit in this cartoon. But it had all the villains in it. It was a really kid cartoon. It wasn't too mature. I just remember watching it as a kid. I think it came out after the movie, because the movie brought some popularity to the property. So they brought out these old cartoons, and I started watching them again.
Yeah. But this comic strip's been going around for since the 30s.
Yeah,
and they're still going on. Yeah.
I remember liking the movie, and I still like aspects of it. Danny Elfman did the music. The music's really great, and like I said, it's visually a beautiful film. Everybody's got crazy green coats and yellow coats.
You know what? For me personally, I think that might be a little forgotten gem from the 90s for me.
Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that movie in forever until you brought it up just now.
We might. Rekindle that topic.
Yeah, we'll talk. Okay.
Later on.
Well, you know what? We'll put a cork in Dick Tracy for now. We'll put a cork in that bottle. Maybe we'll bring it up another time.
All right. But another one real quick.
Because I would like to actually watch Dick Tracy again before we talk about it. Because like I said, it's been years since I've seen that one.
The Phantom.
The Phantom. Dude, we got to talk about this.
We don't have to.
Do we? No, that's fine. Fucking Phantom. I got some. Again, this is another movie. It was.
It looks like okay. When you see the Phantom, you know it's Billy Zane, the big purple costume and the skull ring. It looks like a comic book because guess what? It was based on a comic book. Well, it was originally a comic strip, but it was adapted to a comic book and then the movie.
Yeah, that has that property has a long history.
Back in the 30s again.
Yeah, I know that one's old.
And Phantom was actually the first.
Only in the 30s could they come up with the guy who wears purple and runs around the jungle.
Right. Well, he was the first like superhero to have like tights. So that's like.
No, he doesn't wear tights. He wears a required uniform. Tights. Shut up. Breakfast Club. Sorry, go on.
Damn it!
you need a lobotomy to wear those purple tights.
Damn, I can't believe I missed that one. I'm ashamed of myself.
You know what? You were talking about his skull ring.
Yes.
Only good thing I got to say about the Phantom, I was working at the theater when that movie came out, and they gave us all skull rings as to wear as a way to promote the movie. And I thought that skull ring was awesome, and I would wear it even outside of work. I was a teenager, you know. So that skull ring that I got to wear, and I remember driving around with my skull ring. I felt really tough because I'm wearing a skull ring.
Did you ever punch someone in the face to try to get the imprint of the skull?
All the time.
Yeah.
No. that's the only good thing I got to say about Phantom is they gave me a skull ring.
I
can
say something else about the Phantom. Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yes, Catherine Zeta-Jones. She dips beneath lasers. That's a workaholic.
And I had forgotten until I went back and watched that movie, like, how hot she was in the 90s.
Catherine's like, hey, well, I mean, there's some good actors in that. Mm-hmm. I actually like Billy Zane. James Remar's in that. Mm-hmm. Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa.
Who?
Shang Tsung.
Oh, that guy!
Yes. He's in it. But there's one thing. That fucking, because like I said, I worked there and I used to go into the, I used to get ready to swoop up the theater when this movie was ending. So I've seen the last 5 minutes of this movie because I'd be in the back waiting for it to empty. I've seen the last five minutes of the movie like 20 times. He pulls a fucking Batman Returns.
Oh, here we go.
At the end of the movie, because he wears like the domino mask over his eyes, right. The black man. And he's got the black makeup that you put around your eyes.
Throughout the whole movie.
Yeah. And then right at the end, he unmasks for the girl. And right before he takes his mask off, you could tell he's got no fucking makeup on. The makeup fucking mysteriously vanishes, just like it did with Michael Keaton in Batman Returns. That's bullshit. I was calling bullshit on it in 1996. I call bullshit on it now. Fuck the Phantom.
Well, okay. We're going to move right on to the next one then.
Plus, the movie's stupid. Treat Williams he's not menacing at all. He's silly. He's like wacky and silly. He's not a scary villain at all. And what was his plot? To get, like, three skulls that shoot lasers?
Something like that, yeah.
His plot is to get a skull to shoot lasers so Catherine Zeta-Jones can, like, sexily move between them. Mm-hmm. Like an entrapment, right? That was his plot? Yeah, something like that. Anyways.
It's like how you try to mime that.
Yeah, it's a shame we're not videotaping this. It was very sexy what I was just doing. Okay. Yo, why did I act it out? Just for you, baby.
Okay. But, thank you, sir. real quick, since we're talking about, you know, the Phantom that took place in the 30s, the movie did. Also, it's not on my list here, but I had The Rocketeer.
That was a comic strip? Or
that was a comic book.
That was a comic book?
Yes.
Okay, see, I didn't even know that. You mentioned it a while ago, and I forgot to look into it. I like The Rocketeer, man. That's another gem from the 90s that doesn't get any love that I think kind of holds up, you know, because it takes place in, like, the 40s, or it takes place during the war.
It's very timeless.
Like, he's fighting Nazis.
Yeah.
Timothy Dalton is, like, a Nazi spy. He's, like, a Hollywood Errol Flynn kind of actor who's actually a Nazi spy. And, some guy gets a hold of a rocket. And Terry O'Quinn plays Howard Hughes, who's awesome. Forget Leonardo DiCaprio, man. This guy is Howard Hughes to me.
But real quick, yeah, the comic of The Rocketeer actually came out in 1982. And
but the most important thing about The Rocketeer that holds up is Jennifer Connelly.
I was hoping you were going to say that. Yes.
Jenny. Jennifer Connelly. She's just lovely in everything she does, and she's so cute in this.
When isn't she cute?
Requiem for a Dream. And she's full of heroin. Well, I won't get into that.
Yes.
That movie. Anyways. But yeah, she's so cute. The actual dude, the Rocketeer, kind of never really went on to do anything. I want to say the actor's name is Billy Campbell, and that's just. But he was the only person who never did anything after this movie. You know, obviously Jennifer Connelly and Paul Sorvino and Terry O'Quinn and Timothy Dalton, they've all gone on to have, you know, other work. But can you think of anything that dude did beyond that?
Actually, right now, I'm watching a show that he's on, Helix. It's on Sci-Fi.
Okay, I'll take your word. I'd never heard of that. I think he was in that movie Enough, where he beats up J-Lo.
Yes, he was in Enough. He was in.
I only wanted to see that movie because I wanted to see J-Lo get beat up. Is that bad?
Yes, it is. But he was in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
He's Quincy. He plays Quincy Morris. That's right. He's the cowboy. The Texan with the big knife.
I know my wife watches a series. I haven't watched it, but The Killing. He's on that show.
I've heard of that. Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, crime thriller, crime mystery show. Yeah.
Oh, no. I was going to say, is that with Kevin Bacon? That's The Following. Never mind. Following, I do not know what The Killing is.
But that's...
Does he play The Killing?
I'm going to let you watch and find out, sir.
Who plays The Killing? Okay. All right, well, Rocketeer, yeah, that's another one that needs some love that people don't talk about anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a great... That's a Disney movie.
Yeah, Walt Disney.
That's That's a good family movie. You know, you should be showing your kids that.
It's part of the theme park.
It is?
Yeah.
Wait, Disney World?
Yeah.
Disney World, Disneyland?
It's not a... Oh, fuck, I don't know. It's one of the Disney ones. I don't know.
Because I was at Disney World recently, about 10 years ago, and I didn't see it there. Well, recently.
No, I think it was... It's not a ride or anything, but it's just like, you know, they have the little stands everywhere, the kiosks, and there's like...
Oh, well, like, they got tons of stuff there.
Yeah, so...
They got the Bluesmobile just sitting there. Yeah. Anyway. Well...
Where are we going next? Let's see. Oh, this is one I'm going to mention real quick. We don't spend too much time on it just because we talked to it to death before, but Teenage Mutant Ninja... Turtles.
Oh, Turtles. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know where you were going.
I know. Suspense, my friend.
Like Teenage Mutant Ninja... Oh,
Aliens. Turtles. Aliens, yes.
Aliens. Right. Yes. Well, thank God that's not the case.
But yeah, obviously everybody knows what this is, but for those of you who don't know, it was created back in 1984 by Mirage Studios,
mm-hmm.
by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird.
Dark
comic. Oh, yeah. Nothing like the cartoon or...
Literally, it's black and white.
Yeah.
surprisingly dark. In the first... issue, the first few panels, first few pages, when they defeat the muggers, then they go back in the sewer, and then that's when Splinter tells them their origin,
mm-hmm.
how they came to the mutant, and he says, and now your mission is to go find a Rokusaki and kill him. Splinter sends the turtles in like first 10 pages to go kill Shredder. He sends them, they're black, ninjas, they're black assassins.
Black and white.
Yeah, they're proper ninjas. Splinter wants them to kill people. It's a dark comic. And I wanted to talk about it last time we were talking Ninja Turtles, but I didn't mention that. But yeah, Splinter wants the Turtles to murder people.
And, of course, from 84 to, I think, what, 87, I think, the series, the cartoon came out in 87?
The cartoon came out in 87, yeah.
And then from there, that's when the popularity really just went skyrocketing to a whole new level. And it went to 1990, which
coming
was...
Coming out of our shells. No?
I didn't want to mention that.
Did we mention the Coming Out of Our Shells tour last time? Pizza power.
We may have.
Flying saucer food delight.
If you haven't checked out our commentary episode on Teenage Mutant Ninja
Splinter
Turtles,
even gets a song, Skipping Stones. I saw the Coming Out of Our Shells tour in concert.
I had the cassette tape too.
I bought it from
Pizza Hut. I was part of the fan club from Pizza.
Yeah, I still got my fan club. It's in a frame. The little thingy.
But that was another obviously successful franchise. Had two sequels.
See, we're not even talking about the movie or the book. We're just talking about Ninja Turtles in general as a property because we just love fucking Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, right? Any excuse.
As soon as you bring the comic, I start thinking about the awful, one of the most horrid incarnation of the Turtles right after Next Mutation is the Coming Out of Our Shells tour. That was like the thing that came to mind.
Well, talking about worse, what about part three?
I think Coming Out of Our Shells tour, The Next Mutation, is worse than part three. At least part three has Elias Koteas.
Okay, yeah.
Come on, right there puts it above those two.
But he babies. No, okay, we're getting,
but he's Elias Koteas, yeah. Casey Jones.
Yeah.
He's got the fingerless gloves on. He's awesome. Okay, you said you want to talk about. You shouldn't have brought this one up because I'll go all night talking about this one.
All right, so that's it. Yeah, we can go all night about Ninja Turtles, but. Did you have one that you wanted to mention?
One of the first ones that came to mind, and then I kind of let it slip, is Kick-Ass.
Oh, yes.
That's a really famous property right now, kind of. And I went back and watched these and read them, too.
You read the comics?
I read them and then watched them right afterwards, and now my brain kind of bleed together, and I kind of forget where the comic diverges from. Although, there is a few aspects of the Kick-Ass movie that strays really far from what the comic did.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read the books?
No.
You've seen the movie, though.
Right.
Okay, you know the character of Nick Cage
mm-hmm.
is like an ex-cop.
Yeah.
And they disgraced him, and so he... And then his wife dies of, like, depression, so he takes their only daughter, trains her to be an assassin. That's not how it goes in the books.
Do tell.
Well, in the books, he's...
Spoiler alert.
He's, like, just an average... He's like an accountant. Or something lame, who just loves comic books. And he kidnaps his own daughter and trains her and lies to her and tells her that your mom died and we're avenging her and all that kind of stuff. And he funds this whole venture of theirs by selling his old comics. He has like a crate full of like Spider-Man number one, Amazing Fantasy and all that kind of stuff. And he sells those to buy the weapons and all that kind of stuff. And then when they corner him and they're doing the torture scene and all that, he confesses like, I'm a nobody. I just did it. Because I wanted her to have an interesting life, and then they just shoot him in the back of the head. There's no glory. There's no, you know, where he's tied up, acting. This is one of the few occasions in Kick-Ass the movie where I think Nick Cage's craziness was, like, properly harnessed and unleashed in the right direction. You know, when Hit Girl is trying to rescue him in Kick-Ass, and he's tied up, and he's like, take cover, child!
Yeah.
You know, I'll switch to Kryptonite! And he's yelling like that. I'm loving that. I mean, that's crazy, Nick. That's Nick Cage unloaded, and I'm loving
controlled.
It.
Controlled.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, but they directed his craziness and harnessed it.
With the script.
Yeah. And, you know, now switch to Robin's Revenge and all that. And, oh, I love that. But yeah, and in the movie, they didn't want to make his character such a loser, such a downer, that her life and everything, her meaning and everything was bullshit. And there's a few other things that are equally dark and depressing about the books. That the movie kind of tweaked to give it a more Hollywood-y, happy ending kind of
but
a thing.
There was something about the second movie, I believe. Something with Hit Girl or something, like she was...
The second one, you know, following the tweaks made from the first one, the second one kind of follows it.
Well, the dark aspects of it. I thought there was something that I thought I heard about they cut that was going to be in the movie where she got... they're gonna pretend to take her on a date, and they take her out to the woods.
Oh, that wasn't in the... Okay, now the movie spent a lot more time with her trying to integrate and become... Where she basically meets...
Part
like,
two was Hit Girl. It was a Hit Girl movie, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, but her trying to be normal, the book didn't really delve into that as much,
because mm-hmm.
that's boring. Where she meets, like, the Heathers, the Mean Girls, right, the all right. that kind of stuff, and she makes them puke and shit and all that kind of... Yeah, that, none of that was really in there.
Mm-hmm.
There is, I mean, they touch on it a lot, and she kind of pulls a Batman and just hangs a girl over the ledge of a building and kind of forces her to accept her into mm-hmm. her clique. And then it kind of drops it. Whereas in the movie, they make it seem like she's trying to go straight because she promised her the cop guy, the black guy, that she's going to go straight.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, like I said, her mother never really died. Her mother, she goes back to live with her mom, and she tries to stay straight because it would break her mom's heart, you know.
Yeah.
For years... Her mom thought her daughter was kidnapped, and now she finally got her back. So she tries to stay straight for her mom, which is a much stronger motivation than just, I promised Marcus I won't be a Hit Girl anymore.
Yeah.
But,
I think the second one was a little bit more, I don't know, not as strong as the first one.
No, it wasn't. I think Matthew Vaughn, he did an awesome job with that first movie. The action sequences are shot really well. You really believe a 12-year-old kid is, like, kicking ass.
It was a fun... To see this little girl just like...
Yeah, and that's another thing that was kind of weak about the second one is by then she's getting older and it's not as cool as, you know, Hit Girl...
She's already in high school, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Hit Girl in the books, she stays like 12-ish throughout the whole series. At least the first four series that I've read. I think there's only four or five out. So it's kind of cool that it's a little kid cursing and really killing people in a violent way.
Yeah, I think she just had a growth spurt in between the two movies.
Yeah, and she looks like... A grown-up person dressing up as Hit Girl.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like Hit Girl. But yeah, the books are pretty dark, but pretty, but they're really cool. And I like the first Kick-Ass. And the second one's not bad. It's not as good, but I think it's a good addition. I would like to see a third one. I don't think they will.
It's just the I'm not a big fan of McLovin.
Yeah, he was a big weak. He was still riding the fame from
his
McLovin.
His voice and just grains on my nerves. It's just...
I do love John Leguizamo in Kick-Ass 2.
Yes.
His character could have easily just been a one-dimensional goon, but the fact that he kept having, like, input on how to run the... Because he keeps coming up with, like... Oh, the Russian woman's called her Mother Russia or something. Don't you think that's kind of racist? And he's like, Mother Russia and motherfucker on the same team? How does that work? Like, he kept having all this input on how to run a comic booky gang, which I thought was kind of funny. And then when they killed him, I was like, no. I was actually bummed. Like, no. Not just because it was John Leguizamo dying, but because I really liked his character.
Yeah, it was a twofold.
In that small amount of time.
It was a twofold, yeah.
In that small amount of time, he made that character, like, really fun. And I was, like, bummed out that they killed him.
And this is the second time that we're mentioning Johnny Legs.
In this podcast. He's done some good comic books.
He's a wonderful actor. You know?
He's been the best thing in like two comic book movies. Anyway, enough of Kick Ass. Take Cover, Child! Oh, I just love when Nick Cage does that.
That's going to be the intro to this episode.
Okay. All right, what's another one that you can mention?
This was a comic book movie that I said was the best comic book movie to look like a video game movie, but it's actually a comic book movie.
I think I know what you mean.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Great movie.
Fantastic. It's entertaining, wonderful cast, just the characters themselves, and just the stylized aspect of everything that they were doing.
It's a great looking film, too.
Yes.
The color and the way, yeah, the pacing, the way, it's got an energy to it, you know?
Yeah.
I love that movie. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I think, stole that show. Why she didn't become like a bigger star after that movie came out. She was so confident and cool in that movie.
Yeah.
I don't know why she, you know, Michael Cera, I guess, I think is the only weak link. Cause like you were saying, McLovin, he's kind of a whiny, I don't understand Michael Cera either. Unless you cast him to be a whiny, annoying character.
It kind of works for Scott Pilgrim though.
Yeah. I mean, as far as like, she's out of his league.
Yeah. Yeah,
part of it,
but yeah, I know what you're saying about Michael Cera. I'm not a big fan of his.
Yeah,
no. I can give him a pass in this movie.
Yeah, but a lot of bit characters, and they all come in, do some great work. You know, Chris Evans comes in, he's great. Brandon Routh comes in, he's great. Jason Schwartzman shows up, and he's great in his little bitty thing. So many people just show up. Kieran Culkin, Macaulay Culkin's older brother, as his gay roommate. While he's hilarious, he's great in that movie too. It's got a character named Knives. That's awesome.
Yeah, right. But yeah, just I didn't mention this before, but it was actually created in 2004, released by Oni Press, created by Brian O'Malley, and then the movie came out in 2010, released by Universal. So I would like to see I wouldn't mind a sequel to this or something, some kind of
Have you read those books?
I kind of went back and kind of skimmed through them.
Now the books looks like surprisingly what's the word?
Cartoony?
Cartoony.
Yeah. For a child. It looks like it's...
Look at them, like on the cover, you might think this is like a little kid's book, because they're drawn very innocent-y, cartoony.
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier that it was the best comic movie to look like a video game movie, but it's actually a comic book movie. There was a lot of like 8-bit effects.
Yeah.
Fight scenes.
Even the opening, like I think it's Universal, the scroll is kind of done 8-bit.
Yeah.
And music.
Then the whole, when a boyfriend would come on, it would be the fight scene.
The energy bars.
Yeah.
And when he punches somebody, it becomes coins.
And coins come
back.
Yeah. So it's a wonderful video game movie. But there was, after the movie came out, there was a video game that came out.
Of course.
And it was based on old 8-bit 2D graphics. Side-scrolling, like the old Ninja Turtle video game, you know.
And this movie is also important because we get to see a fight between George Michael Bluth and Ann Veal from Arrested Development. Mae Whitman is one of the evil exes, the female evil ex, but she was in Arrested Development as Michael Cera's, as Ann Veal. She's great in that show. Her?
You stole it from me. I was going to see it.
Oh, sorry. But to see them two fight was kind of like a little meta humor, I guess, or something like that. She puts a hard-boiled egg in her mouth and squirts mayonnaise in it. She calls it mayo-neg. I gotta go back and watch the rest of Development now. Just talking about it, I want to go watch some of those episodes.
Just the first 3 seasons.
Yeah, See, like, Michael Cera's good in that character because George Michael is a whiny, I'm George Michael, you know, so he's good for that. But this is like a leading man.
I was about to say, and it's just a side character. He's yeah. Not, like, it's not revolving around
He's not front center. He's not the titular character. Yeah. He's a hero. That's another good one.
Oh, I think a really good one was back in the 90s. It's very popular for the time. I don't know if it's if it holds up or anything, but it's definitely based off a comic book, The Mask.
That's a, oh, I guess. You said a really good one? I was like, ooh, what is it? I don't think The Mask movie holds up.
You don't think so?
Well,
I haven't seen it in a while. I don't know. There's a lot of visuals in that movie, a lot of one-liners, things like that, that kind of stand out in my mind, but I don't know if the whole movie itself...
Maybe it's because Jim Carrey doesn't hold up to me.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
He's really fallen off. I mean, I don't know. That's not fair to say. I mean, I'm sure I go back and watch Dumb and Dumber, Ace Ventura. It doesn't take away how hilarious those movies are. Just, but even back in the day, I remember thinking, like, I'm supposed to like this movie. But I remember it took an effort for me to say I like The Mask.
Well, real quick. It first came out in 1989 by Dark Horse. And then the movie actually came out in 1994 by New Line Cinema. So, you know, one thing I remember about this was, of course, besides the whole Jim Carrey and the special effects for the mask and everything, but Cameron Diaz.
You're going to say this is when she was the hottest she's ever been, isn't she?
I think I said this before.
Everybody says that, though. Everybody says this is the hottest she's ever been.
I say this was when she was hot. I don't know. It's
okay, well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say that, yeah, because I've never really found her hot, like, to begin with.
Like, even when you go to Charlie's Angels, like, she's supposed to be, like, cute and sexy. I didn't care too much for her at that time either, but...
And I've never really been part of the Cameron Diaz bandwagon.
I wasn't either, but just that movie, Mask, when she comes out and...
You know, maybe I need to go back and watch it, because it's been a long time since I've seen The Mask. Now, from what I understand of the comic, that was really dark, too. Like, I think The Mask was, like, killing people and stuff mm-hmm. like that also. Yeah. From what I understand, the comic was surprisingly dark, and then they toned it down for the movie, and then they made a cartoon of it.
I don't remember the cartoon.
I remember they made an animated cartoon of it. And it was basically, I mean, of course they're going to make a cartoon. The Mask was basically a cartoon. Yeah. Yeah, very Tex Avery influenced.
Obviously the scene with the...
where he's the wolf
yeah,
and his jaws
yeah,
dropping.
That's Tex Avery right there. Yeah.
And then it spawned a sequel that I've never seen.
I've never seen it.
I already don't want to talk. I mean, just from what I know of it, I don't want to talk about it. The less said about this sequel, the better. Son of the Mask.
That's all we need to say about it.
Jamie Kennedy is the Mask.
You've already said too much.
And Jamie Kennedy... he's the mask. There you go. Something about his... I think his dog gets the mask or something at one point, and we got to... No, was that in the...
That was in the original...
That was in the... Okay, maybe I'm mistaken. No, his baby gets a mask.
Yeah.
In the... I've never seen the Son of the Mask. It looks
the only thing I've seen for Son of the Mask was the fact that it's Jamie Kennedy, but he's got the mask, and he's got the red hair. So he's got, like, the green face with the red hair. Like, oh, God, this is... You're not doing us gingers any favors.
Now, I remember, like, for The Mask, for such a low-budget movie, the effects for the time were pretty good. It had some pretty
clean.
Yeah.
It had good visual effects.
It
did look messy or anything.
Considering that, like, you can tell this wasn't a big studio movie. They had some pretty good effects considering it wasn't a big film.
Yeah. You know what? One thing I did, one movie I forgot to mention, Barbed Wire. And the only reason I mention it is because it's a non-Marvel DC comic book and it was a movie. But, you know, Pamela Anderson, that was supposed to be like a... maybe launching point for an acting or something. I don't know, but
I want to say that came out in mid-90s.
Yeah, I mean, most of these were the mid-90s was a hotbed for
this before they realized Marvel and DC was like an untapped resource of
sure.
Now I never really saw Barbed Wire. I remember it would come on like HBO or something every once in a while, and if I was flipping channels and it was on, I would leave it on there for like 10 minutes just to see if Pam Anderson like got naked or something. And then she didn't, so I would change the channel.
I just remember she killed someone with her shoe. Like, she threw it like a heel at someone and... Yeah.
Like, over her feet. Why'd you eat the ice cream off the floor?
But it... no, it came out in 96, so yeah.
Okay, yeah, more... Yeah, okay. In the 90s. When Pamela Anderson was...
God, it had... Still, like, it had Udo Kier in it. Xander Berkeley.
Jack Noseworthy, I remember he was he was like blind or something. I just remember her not being able to act at all. I'm thinking like, why did you give her a movie?
There's two reasons why she got hired for that role.
What are they?
The left one and the right one.
Yeah. You ever see that show VIP?
Yeah, once or twice.
Yeah, you stopped and watched a little bit of it.
Admit. I was a teenager.
Yeah, okay. I saw a little bit of it too. That was again. I was like, wow. I mean, she can't act at all. I'm sure she's a nice person and everything, but she's terrible.
Got a wonderful personality.
Wonderful personality, left and right one. Okay, you know what? There's one I want to talk about, and I think it's not DC. Because it's Alan Moore. It's the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Okay. We were talking about this before we started, and I was trying to be nitpicky about this, because the whole idea was non-Marvel DC.
Is it DC then, technically? Because I know a lot of Alan Moore's works...
It was owned...
Technically... Yeah. I mean, they're not part of the DC universe as far as like Superman and Batman, but DC owns like...
Here's the technicality part of it. Okay. So, in 1999... Alan Moore created this story, this title for what was created called America's Best Comics. It was an idea that Jim Lee, if you're a comic book fan, you know who Jim Lee is, but he was the head of Wildstorm. But actually, this was before Wildstorm, I'm sorry, it was still Image. So, America's Best Comics was an imprint of Image Comics. That part got bought out when Jim Lee left Image. That got over to... I know, this is...
You lost me.
Yeah. So anyway, basically it went from Image to DC.
Okay, because there's like...
Long story short.
There's movies that aren't like DC Universe that are technically DC that we could talk about, like Red or Losers. Mm-hmm. But those are technically DC.
These are DC.
Those are both good movies, though.
Yeah.
Losers is a good book, too. I've never read Red. Yeah. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. This is one of the very few times a movie... ever fooled me through a trailer into thinking it was going to be good. I got a pretty good bullshit detector as far as reading or hearing about a movie and knowing what I'm going to walk into. Mm-hmm. Rarely do I get excited for a movie and I go to the theater and I'm like, wow, that was not what I expected. That was terrible. I thought it was going to be good. I remember going to see it thinking, oh, this movie looks cool. It's got a cool cast. And it's in a comic book movie. I can't, Alan Moore did it. He did Watchmen. I was like, and it sucked. It was stupid. It's basically, if you haven't seen the movie, it's kind of like it takes a lot of characters from literature, like Captain Ahab and Alan Quatermain and Dr. Jekyll and things like that. And
Invisible Man, was he one?
Who?
Invisible Man?
The Invisible, well, yeah, not the character. The character in the movie stole the formula from,
oh, that's right.
From the literary Invisible Man.
Yeah.
And Mina Harker, who is... the wife of Jonathan Harker, who battles Dracula in Bram Stoker's Dracula, so she's a vampire in it. Oh, Dorian Gray, and because it's a British comic, so it's nothing but British characters. But because this is an American movie, they threw in Huck Finn. No, not Tom Sawyer. One of those. Somebody. Shane West plays some American kid that they threw in to satisfy American audiences. And the villain, I want to say, is Moriarty, Sherlock Holmes' villain. So, and it's also, this movie is also famous because it was the last thing. Sean Connery retired after this movie. I heard they wanted to be in Lord of the Rings, but he was like, I don't understand that, so he passed. I think they wanted him to be in Matrix. He was like, I don't get that, I passed. So they offer him another movie that's, you know, clearly youth-oriented. He's like, okay, I guess I passed on these other two great properties. I'll do this one. And it sucked, and he quit acting after this movie.
So it was the downfall of...
this movie killed Sean Connery, so it's notorious for that.
Wow.
It was just bad.
I think this was a case of I wanted to like this movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's all the characters and everything. And
it sounds like a cool premise.
Yeah.
Take a bunch of literary characters together.
Make an Avengers team out of them.
Yeah. It's like literary Avengers.
Yeah.
Now, there's a show on Showtime. I think it's Showtime called Penny Dreadful.
Yeah, it's on Showtime, yeah.
That's kind of, a lot of people comparing it. It's kind of the same thing, only it's like a drama. They're not a superhero team fighting evil. It's a drama. And they take some of the same characters, like Dorian Gray and Victor Frankenstein and things like that. And Mina Harker's in it. And it's an ensemble of literary characters. That's an interesting show. Eva Green's in that. Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, I watched like the first two episodes. And it was all over the place for me. Like the first two episodes.
And my heart, Rose Tyler herself is in that show. You don't know who I'm talking about when I say Rose Tyler.
Enlighten me.
She's only the greatest companion the Doctor has ever had.
What doctor? What are you talking about?
Anyways, what other movies, what other comic book movies do you have?
Actually, just got. You know what? I know there's probably tons more that we could be going on and on, but I think we've made our point on this. But there's one more I was going to touch on real quick. And again, this kind of goes in with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, where it's kind of a technicality, but Men in Black.
How is that technicality?
Okay. Well, again, do you want the long story or short story? Back in 1990...
Give me the 10-peso version.
Okay. 1990, it came out through Aircell Comics. That was eventually bought out through different companies and ended up in Marvel. So technically, it could be considered a Marvel movie.
Okay.
But at the time, it was the original comic was a different comic, so it wasn't Marvel DC. But that came out in 1990, and the movie came out in 97, released by Columbia. Of course, another starring role for...
That was back when he owned the summer. That was when he owned July.
Yeah, yeah.
Before Wild Wild West took him down.
He had a good run there for a while.
Yeah, Independence Day and the Men in Black. And he thought he could pull a hat trick in Wild Wild West.
He got cocky.
He got cocky, yeah. I like Men in Black. Men in Black 2 was a big stumble. Less said about that one, the better. But Men in Black 3, I thought was a lot of fun.
You thought they try to pull the rings back and try to...
And I thought Josh Brolin did a great Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah, and he was a lot of fun, too. Yeah, 1 and 3 are good. Second one, you know, big stumble.
But it's something to be said that it's another comic book franchise that...
That had a cartoon also.
Yes.
I remember...
They went all out there in the cartoon.
I never watched it. I remember it was on. I would you know, flip channels and it'd be on. I never really gave it a shot.
Yeah, I think I may have watched an episode here or there, but yeah, they went kind of crazy with the aliens and things like that. So more so than the movies did.
Yeah. But that first movie is really good. Danny did a great score for it, and it was a lot of fun. It was before Will Smith really became Will Smith. He was I was gonna say he toned it down a little bit, but to be honest, no, he didn't.
He didn't.
At all. You know, you get a... Oh, yeah. I was about to do a line from Will Smith, but... And, of course, we have that movie to thank for the song that was playing everywhere that summer. Here come the men.
Oh, don't. Stop. Oh, God. If I have that song stuck in my head because you, I'm going to kill
it. Let me see you just bounce with me. Just bounce with me. That dance where he's jiggling his hands up and down while he's hopping back and forth like the ground's really hot. Or so. Oh, God. That was the dumbest dance.
He was just getting jiggy with it.
That's he was all. Getting nicely done. But yeah, but I ain't gonna lie, I was singing that song quite a bit back in the day before it got annoyingly ubiquitous.
Yeah, you had no choice because it was everywhere.
It was everywhere. Yeah,
it was brainwashing your head.
It was on TRL number one for, for a week or so. Is TRL still a thing?
No.
It's not?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
It involves music, and it's on... No, it's not on TV.
Okay, it involves music videos, right?
Yeah, it's... It might be on, like, MTV, like, 3 or 4 or whatever.
For real.
Because MTV 2, it used to be...
I remember MTV 2.
Yeah.
I liked MTV 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now...
Pure videos.
But not anymore. I think they've gone TV shows, too.
I deleted MTV... Because, I mean... From my channel list. I would just, like, when I'm scrolling up and down, I would just pass right over MTV. I haven't watched MTV in a long time.
Yeah, I think the last time I even watched something on MTV was, it was a movie awards. I think it was the year the first Transformers movie came out.
And I bet it swept the awards. Best movie.
Best actors.
I think the last time, you know, it's funny, I think the last time I watched MTV Awards, I think Wild Wild West was one of the nominees. Maybe that'll give you a time period of how long it's been since I watched those.
Basically, MTV sucks.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, so that's, I think that kind of encompasses the list that we came up with. But, you know, listeners, you know, if there's any movies that we may have missed or we didn't think of, definitely let us know. Chime in and give us a... You know, list on Facebook or on our Twitter account. We'll be glad to give you a shout out on a future episode. Like, you know,
totally.
If you tell us, one thing about these movies that we mentioned is something I observed through something that has all these they're all similar in one aspect is they take chances with the movies. Like Scott Pilgrim, you know, 300, Sin City. Those are different. They try different things. Like, it's
yeah, that's true. They were all kind of like. In a way, the first of what they were trying to do there. Yeah. Yeah. Groundbreaking, some of these, one might say.
Absolutely. And just taking it to a darker tone, like Crow, and to a lesser extent Spawn, I guess. But
like the way Tank Girl stitched in animation randomly and things like that. Mm-hmm. And,
that's what I'm saying. Especially, Tank Girl's a good example because they did a lot of different things in that movie.
Like, that's the movie I'm surprised got made.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that a studio saw this idea and saw this script and said, yes, we'll pony up millions of dollars to make this kind of a movie. You know, they had faith in this crazy idea, so, you know, good for them
for taking chances. Supposedly on that, I just thought about that, on Tank Girl, all the special effects and everything for, like, the kangaroos and things like that. Stan Winston got, they worked out some kind of deal. He did it on the cheap for him.
Stan Winston, the great, late great,
yes. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that we should have mentioned. is there anything that you're thinking of off the top of your head?
No, I mean, I think we covered quite a few of them. I mean, I know there's more out there so I know there's a few more that aren't necessarily, like, superhero-based, per se, but technically fall in the realm of they were a comic, like American Splendor or Ghost World. You know, now Ghost World is a great comic, and I enjoy the hell out of that movie, too. But it's kind of a different animal than everything on this list.
Yeah, we're trying to take a list of the fun movies that were...
Snowpiercer. I mean, there's another one. Snowpiercer.
That was one I didn't know that was a comic first.
Yeah. When the movie first came out, it was getting so much buzz, and I was reading, like, I was hearing all about it. So I would read articles, and they kept mentioning it's, like, I think a Korean comic or something. It's not an American comic.
Mm, okay.
But yeah, that one, again, these are technically comics, but they're not so much, I don't want to say these, everything we mentioned are superheroes per se.
But it falls into the
but yeah,
the comic, it's obvious comic book material.
Yeah, there you go. It kind of falls under the fantasy, kind of aspect to it. So we kind of wanted to keep a theme going, I guess, with this list. But if you wanted to discuss those or say, hey, why the hell didn't you mention, you know, Snowpiercer? That was a great movie. And again, I'll say Snowpiercer. What you were saying, it took chances. It was very different. I'll leave it at that.
You know what's funny about that? I have that. This has been sitting in my queue on Netflix for like 2 months now.
I feel like I'm missing something because everything I read says it's brilliant. And when I saw it, I was like, I didn't get it. Maybe I need to see it a second time or something. But I just felt like I just didn't get it.
Yeah,
it is the best way to describe it. But again, the idea and some of the visuals and. Are very well, and Chris Evans is actually really good in it, and so is Tilda Swinton. Tilda Swinton's amazing in that movie as an actress. I almost didn't even recognize her, and she's crazy in that movie. It's an interesting movie, I guess, to check out for sure. Yeah.
Well, maybe I should actually hit the play button on Netflix.
I'd be curious to hear what someone else says because I don't know anybody else who's really seen it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd love to bounce some ideas. Am I going crazy or did I miss something? Because everybody's calling it brilliant. And I'm not saying it's not. Maybe I just need to give it a second go. Or like I said, bounce, discuss it, and maybe I'll see something that I missed the first time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, something to think about for the future, I guess. So, if we have anybody to talk about. I think that kind of sums up our show for this time. So before we head out... of course, I mentioned before, you can catch all our episodes at popculturerewind.podbeam.com. Also, do a search. Find us on iTunes. Give us a rate and review. Subscribe to us. And also on the Stitcher Radio app. And you can give us a little thumbs up and subscribe to us on that, too.
App.
That got you. Oh, I just recently got us onto it's a website called Player FM. It's like another site that kind of catalogs like podcasts. And they have
what's
like,
it called?
Player FM, or player.fm, excuse me, that's what it is.
I do not know this.
Yeah. Anyway, if cool. You're on it, we're on it too. So there you go. Ta-da. also, keep track of us on social media through Facebook at facebook.com/popculturerewind. And on the Twitter machine, it's at popculturerwnd. Yes.
Nice. Okay.
I should use that once in a while.
Do you really? I thought you just do the... whatever. Okay. Well, now that's out the way.
Yeah. Also, check out some of our other podcasts that I'm a part of. If you're a wrestling fan, Houston Wrestling Radio, check that out at our website, houstonwrestlingradio.com. Also, if you're a horror fan, Deep in the Horror of Texas, that's another one. We're all on iTunes, Stitcher as well. Facebook and everything. So give those a chance too if you like those genres, I guess. But so Xavier, thanks again for coming around and doing another episode.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Yeah. These are so much fun.
And until next time, folks, always remember to pop your culture.
Take care of a child. Let me see you just bounce it with me, just bounce with me, just bounce it with me. Come on, let me see you just slide with me, just slide with me, just slide with me. Come on, let me see you take a walk with me, just walk it with me, take a walk with me. Come on and make your neck work. Now freeze. Tell you this in closing, I know we might seem imposing, but trust me, if we ever show in your section, believe me, it's for your own protection. Cause we see things that you need not see, and we be places that you need not be. So go with your life, forget the Roswell crap, show love to the black suit, cause that's the men in, that's the men in.
Oh. I should make that like a ringtone or something for somebody, anybody.
Yeah. You know, one I forgot to mention was Mystery Men. Because I didn't know up until recently that that was actually based, loosely based, on a comic book. It's not directly, there wasn't a Mystery Men comic book.
I didn't even know that was a comic book property.
Yeah, okay, check this out. It
seems so silly.
Yeah, well, get this. I don't know. In the 90s, there was a comic called The Flaming Carrot. It was an anamorphic carrot with arms and legs. But he actually, in the comic, I know it's crazy.
Was he the size of a carrot?
I think he's a size, full size man, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But a carrot.
Yeah, literally a carrot. Do a search for a flaming carrot, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But in the comic, he joined a group called the Mystery Men. Okay? And in this group, there was a lot of characters that we saw in the movie. So, those characters from Mystery Men were the live-action Mystery Men movie.
Oh, the Flaming Carrot comics.
Yep.
Hmm.
Did you see what I'm talking about?
It's a dude.
It's a carrot.
it looks like a guy with a carrot for a head. Yeah. Is what it looks like. He's got arms and legs, and he's wearing, like, pants and a shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like his feet are leaves. I want to check this out.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's... Oh, wait. Team affiliations. Mystery Men.
Yep. See that? So, there you go.
Oh, but I clicked on Mystery Men, and it brought me to the movie webpage, so...
It'll tell, like, you scroll down, it'll show you all that stuff.
Yeah. Did you like Mr. Man?
It was fun, yeah.
I liked it.
This should be an honorable mention on our episode.
Yeah.
Like, I should leave all this in at the end.
We should have talked about Mr. Man. Yeah, that was a funny movie with a good cast, too. Greg Kinnear is hilarious in that, too, and Gene Garofalo. And
Hank Azaria, right?
Hank Azaria, Jeffrey Rush, Ben Stiller. Yes, he was good in it. I'll give him credit. you know what? Who has a cameo in that movie? Michael Bay.
Really?
He has like one line. Can we bring the brewskis?
And then he blows up.
Then he just explodes. He opens up his shirt and he shows off his sexy boobs and abs, and then he blows up.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.